American Weekend.
You know, Carl, we have a returning guest and a friend and a man who actually filled in for you several weeks
yes.
ago when you were off doing something. I think it was you're visiting your parole officer, but I'm not sure what it was. But,
and may I add one note? A heck of a guy.
Yes,
I had to get a heck of a guy in there.
Political analyst Alan Marcus, president and CEO of the Marcus Group, a very fine public relations company based out of New Jersey, but he works globally. And, Alan, welcome back to Smith Sabatino.
Well, it's great to be back, and I just want you to know I understand Carl was actually out trying to reignite the Herman Cain to president campaign.
You weren't going to miss that opportunity, were you, Alan?
Carl, I try never to miss that opportunity.
Well, you
Carl,
know.
Listeners, they should know that Carl was heavily touting Herman Cain 4 years ago.
Thank you. I wanted to give the background there because when we were on radio back at those days, and I still don't believe that Carl was talking about Herman.
I worked hard for
Even
Herman.
He's a nice man.
He's a nice man.
Anyway, Alan, there's a lot going on in the political arena of this country. Where would you like to start?
Well, I'd like to send a note to the Republican members of the United States Senate, tell them that we have not changed to a parliamentary form of government, that the President of the United States still conducts foreign policy, and that the letter that they sent to someone in Iran, it probably went to the wrong address, but that the letter they sent should probably have been appropriately sent to the White House, which is at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., mark it to the attention of President Obama, and he'll get it eventually. I think that's one of the great stories, Rollin and Carl, of all time, that the United States Senate has now decided that it is going to conduct foreign policy.
I found that, frankly, just abominable, only because of the separation of powers.
Well, we've had a constitution that's worked for like 325-plus years, and one of the things that I think anybody who follows the United States politics and governance will agree that we, on terms of foreign policy, we come together on a bipartisan basis. We do not allow our political differences to be played out overseas. That's never happened, and hopefully never would happen again. But it happened in the last week. Members of the Senate, you know, should learn from their elders that this is not the way we do business in the United States. We do not undercut the president for political reasons. We stand together politically as a country in dealing with these international issues of high importance to the security of the nation.
You know, Carl, you and I are all old enough to remember back even in the Eisenhower era, when we were, you know, first starting out to learn in let's say middle school. I don't understand, why do you think, Alan, that this kind of aberration has happened within the United States Senate?
Well, it's become so politicized and so marginalized. By the way, I was in elementary school at that time.
you had to get that.
Sure.
Had to get
sure.
that point.
I had
sure.
to get that one in too, Carl. But seriously, I think if we look at how the country has become so divided along political lines, we're not Republicans and Democrats anymore. We're the hard right versus the left leaning. Everything is based on the ability to secure political power, not on doing what is in the best interest of the nation as a whole. The President of the United States has shown absolutely no respect. And historically, even if you don't like the president, you respect the president. In Richard Nixon's darkest days in Watergate, when he was on the verge of being impeached, he was still able to conduct foreign policy. He was still shown respect. And frankly, he saved the state of Israel and he saved the Mideast from a war that would still be going on to this day had he not brokered a peace in 1973, in October, November of 1973. And that's because he had the country behind him. He had the Senate and the House behind him. That no longer exists.
But doesn't this beg another question, Alan? And it begs the question of what what thinking leads these, and these are not, these are bright people that run, that are senators, that are congressmen. These are not people that, they have intelligence. What would actually, what would make them think that this was even going to have any standing? Where's the thinking here? And that's the biggest concern that I have.
Carl, I'm not so sure that I can agree with your premise that they're bright. And the reason is, and I'm not saying that to be comical, because of the internet, because of the way we communicate today, because of this allegation that there is a freedom of speech where you can say anything you want, we chase good people away from public service. It is no longer a noble undertaking as it was in the 50s and in the 60s, you know, where you had Senator McCarthy, have you no shame? Today, that would be laughed at. So people of merit don't even get involved in politics because the next thing you know, they're skewered by anonymous postings or frankly, on either CNBC, if you're leaning to the right by that leftist group, or on Fox News, if you lean to the left in that fascist right-wing group. And I say that half-jokingly. So why get involved in politics anymore? As a result of that, we have a lot of mediocrity sitting in the United States Senate and in the House of Representatives. And the last time we probably had that much mediocrity was in Germany in the 1930s. And that ended up, you know, changing that government forever.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know, we might as well tell it like it is here, Rollin.
Well, you always have. You always have. Let me get to some...
That may be something of an exaggeration, but there comes times when you have to do that for emphasis.
Well, I agree. I agree. But let's get to some other issues here, because we have not a lot of time left on this segment, and I want you to hold over for the next segment also.
Sure thing, Rollin.
All right. Hillary Clinton's emails, your comment.
First off, 30,000 emails that were personal is a big number of emails. I would ask all of our listeners, go into your delete account and see how many times you wrote about recipes or weddings or this or that. Having said that, she's the only hope the Democratic Party has. And so I believe that she will be rehabilitated by Democrats who have been pretty critical of this issue. I think we're also going to find out that many public officials have been using private email accounts. I know it really wasn't news to me, and I think it wasn't news to others. That doesn't make it right. I think that it also casts, again, the shadow on the way the Clinton family conducts business. And for those who think that it's... that they play ping pong, they're wrong. They play darts. And, I mean, this isn't kid stuff. She'll come back from it. I think that she tries to manage her news like her husband did. She deals with adversity pretty well. But in the bottom line, Rollin and Carl, who do the Democrats have, you know, if she implodes? There's nobody there.
I can say one thing. You're absolutely correct. And I will say this. She is not the only one that does this. For those of us that have worked the Hill and been in Washington, I've done the Beltway thing, as you know, Roland and Alan, for a long time. I can tell you, she's not the only one. They're all working their own system, if you will, because it's the way they can conduct their business. Should she have done it? Probably not. And she even said that in the interview. Will she be resurrected? Without question.
Well, let me just add one thing here. The last time Carl was on the Hill, they used semaphore to communicate.
Well, actually, the last time he was on the Hill, Eisenhower was leaving.
I said goodbye.
But, Carl, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I often get calls from reporters, you know, who ask me because they're trying to do research, and they say, do you know if so-and-so uses a private account in addition to their government account? So it's very commonly done. It is not done for convenience. It's done to skirt scrutiny.
That's correct.
Let's be honest about it. That's why it's done.
Yes.
And in this case, she got caught.
All right, has the media just overblown this, and should we just let it go?
No, I think that you need to have standards because you have Colin Powell said he did it, but then the law changed. She says she did it within the law. Well, let's have a do-over. Let's establish once and for all, does the public have a right to those emails? Also, what the security issues are, et cetera. But has it been overdone? No, I think that whenever a public official clearly tries to skirt transparency, if you will, it's worth talking about.
Stay with us, Alan. We're going to carry you over to the next segment. We're running out of time in this segment. This is good stuff. We're going to keep going with this. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. Alan Marcus is our guest. This is Smith Sabatino on America Weekend. And I'm getting all these. I always get these signs
well,
from
you,
everyone's.
You took us out too early.
I like doing.
We could have had another 8 seconds of good conversation, but no, you had to end this thing.
That is correct. We now have 5 seconds left. 4, 3, 2. We're back.
America Weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. What time of day is your spouse most likely to be unfaithful? Tough question, and it becomes personal when it happens to you. Here's the social science of it. It's been estimated that as many as 43% of the population will have at least one affair during their marriage. Or put another way, about one out of every two marriages will suffer through one spouse being unfaithful to the other. And put another way, one out of every two families suffer when one spouse is unfaithful. But what time of day do most of these dalliances occur? The answer? Between noon and 3 o'clock during the work week. What's the cheap psychological trick? Love hurts. But when an affair enters a home, it hurts financially, emotionally, and really hard to overcome. Does this sound right for you? Let me know at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Think green. Harrison with you. Big news for milk drinkers. There's now an official FDA petition from scores of doctors to outlaw the use of genetic tampering with cow's milk. For 20 years now, non-organic dairies have been injecting cows with a drug called Prozalac, technically known as recombinant bovine growth hormone, or RBGH. This petition requires that milk and other dairy products be labeled with a warning such as contains elevated levels of insulin-like growth factor, which poses major risks of breast, prostate, and colon cancers, end quote. Turns out cow hormone maker Monsanto, along with the FDA, covered up the deleterious effects of bovine growth hormone and the offshoot of pus in commercial milk. If the petition works, you'll be allowed to know which non-organic milks are contaminated with this recombinant bovine growth hormone.
Think green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.